Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Before I jump into this week's episode of Sup, I need to take a minute and let you know that this entire podcast is made possible by my supporters on Patreon. Each and every one of their pledges goes towards making this podcast happen week to week. Some months it makes it happen twice a week, as is the case currently with the regular scheduled episodes happening on Thursdays and Lohan Island episodes airing on Fridays. To all my people on Patreon, thank you so much. Your support makes my life a dream, truly. I get to talk about Lindsay Lohan's beach house and Vanderpump Rules for multiple hours a week. I honestly can't think of a better way to live life. And you guys give me this gift. If you want to get involved, it's very, very simple. All you have to do is visit www.patreon.com/sexyuniquepodcast. And it is there that you will find all the information you need to become a supporter of SUP. For as little as a $1 per episode pledge, you will have access to over 60 bonus episodes, as well as recaps covering seasons 1 and 2 of Vanderpump Rules. That's a ton of content for a very reasonable price. Check it out, www.patreon.com/sexyuniquepodcast for more details. And please check out my new store, sexyuniquestore.com. You can buy Road to Sur posters, Sexy Unique podcast posters, as well as Vanderpump Rules is a Show for Genius stickers. They're sold out right now, but a restock is coming soon. Trust me, I hear that the demand is high for my geniuses to show off their high IQs. And I will let you guys know when stickers are back in stock. Without further ado, I give to you this week's episode of Sup. This is the Sexy Unique Podcast, an exploration of Vanderpump Rules.
Ain't nobody got me feeling like I'm feeling you.
And I'm your host, Lara Marie Shane Hall.
Yeah. Everybody freeze, put your hands up. We ain't about to take it easy, I hope you cakes up. London with the beach, here we go, so in. Then we go with a friend, here we both win.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Sexy Unique Podcast. I'm your host, Lara, and I'm here today. It's like a technological marvel for me. I'm Skyping, or not even Skyping, but just recording with an illustrious guest, a punkhead that people have honestly been telling me about your obsession with Vanderpump Rules for a long time. So I'm excited to have you here. It's Felix Biederman, one of the co-hosts of Chapo Trap House.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Hi. It feels like a long time coming. I'm really happy about this like full circle moment. But I want to know, how did you get into Vanderpump Rules? Like, have you been on board since the beginning, or like, what's the history?
Oh, no, I have not. I have not been there since the beginning. I wish I was. But, you know, like so many people, I found out about it through a friend, And the last dalliance, I'd say, that I had with reality TV, do you remember when Richard Lawson would recap Real Housewives of New Jersey on Gawker?
Do I? I mean, that was one of the golden ages of recaps.
It was. They were the. Those were some of the funniest, probably the funniest recaps of anything I ever read. Like, yeah. Just incredible. And that was like, you know, of course, I watched Jersey Shore, like a lot of people, mm-hmm. but I hadn't really watched it in a while. But yeah, a friend turned me on to Vanderpump Rules, and it immediately transfixed me. It immediately gripped me in this way that I hadn't been gripped in a while. I think it's sort of a similar thing to the Real Housewives of New Jersey in that they are so uniquely awful to each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. Indeed.
Yeah. And they also think that their lives are like the best lives ever. Like, you compared it kind of to Jersey Shore, or you brought up Jersey Shore, and that was like my first true reality, kind of like, well, not I guess my first obsession, but when I really was like, wait, this like microcosm of horrible people that are all just like down with their lives, like Vanderpump Rules is very Jersey Shore adjacent.
I almost feel like with Jersey Shore, they were a bit more self-aware, a lot more, I'd say, actually, than the cast of Vanderpump Rules. I mean, who knows how much of, you know, the show you see is an act. There is a pro wrestling aspect to all reality TV. But I would say Jersey Shore in general, the cast members seemed a lot more in on it and more aware of who they were in their lives. Whereas with Vanderpump Rules, it's like, I don't know, it's kind of like, it's like prisoners making their own society, sort of. It doesn't seem to correspond.
It's Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, nothing seems to correspond with the rest of the world. There are these bizarre hierarchies, and it's, I think the thrilling thing about it, and I think the thing why people love it so much, is that it's incredibly insular. If reality TV is an escape, this is the most escapist, not because it's the most exciting or the locales or the events are the most exciting, because they're removed from the characters and the world. They're not. It's a bunch of, you know, SoCal people working in a restaurant / bar, and that in and of itself does not seem that exciting, but the insularity of it, the way that it doesn't seem to correspond with the rest of the world at all, how small their world and their hatreds and their schemes are. There's a reason it resonates so strongly with people.
Yeah, it's like, I always say it's like a mirror of society. Like, it's very indicative of the times we live in. I think Vanderpump Rules kind of more than any other reality show currently.
100%. And I think, you know, you see all these wretched articles really since during the election that are like, you know, to understand Trump, we're going to go to the Rust Belt and talk mm-hmm. to people who voted for him. And really, it's not indicative of people who live in the Rust Belt, or it just, you're trying to attain this sort of bullshit American archetype. But I feel if you want to understand Trump and the Trump voters, you should watch this show.
Yeah,
because it's all the
Tom.
Yeah, it's all the smallness and meanness and pettiness and just pointless abuses of power. That's it. If you want to understand, that's it. This is American culture.
It is
more than anything.
Who to you is the most Trumpian character on the show right now? Because I think it changes season to season, but I'd be interested to hear what your perspective is at this point in the game.
It's a good question. I was thinking about this a lot last night when I was catching up. You know, I think if you made Trump watch the show and, you know, figure out who he is, he would definitely say he's Lisa, but mm-hmm. he's so not.
No.
He's, you know, he's a mix, I'd say, of James Kennedy, Stassi, and Jax. And just depending on, like, sometimes, like with the DACA dangling the carrot, kind of. It's like he has the cruelness of a James Kennedy. Or sometimes I think about Jax. Sorry, the guy's name is escaping me for a second. When Jax just revealed that guy had an affair for no reason. The guy with the boogie board. Shit, I had his name written down because I'm awful with names. But
Tom Schwartz.
Yes. Yeah.
He said that he like hooked up with a girl in Vegas.
Yeah. That's very just pointless to throwing someone under the bus. But Stassi, he also has a lot of Stassi in him. Just the constant threats and belittling people and liking to toy with people. He's a mix. And depending on what day you get him, he's one of those three, but mostly just a mix.
Yeah, that's so true. And like the recent temper tantrums are very like James Kennedy, like negotiating or attempting to negotiate, but when his demands aren't met, just like storming out of the room. It's also kind of Jax from last season when he like flipped everyone off and ran out of the restaurant and like punched a phone.
Yeah, yeah, he doesn't like, I think that he would like to be Jax, but he doesn't. You know, there are many types of stupid guys in America. We have a wide variety of types of stupid men. And Donald Trump, I think a lot of his voters fit the Jax mold. But he is a James Kennedy. He's a messy bitch at the end of the day. Not that Jax isn't, but, you know.
But James is messier, for sure.
One of the messiest characters I have ever seen on reality TV. Ever.
He can't help himself. Like, you don't even see him having awareness in the moment of his messiness that, like, shit's unraveling and he needs to reel it in. Like, he just, like, it's, like, splat immediately.
So, okay, so you know when he did the thing where he's freestyling at, and he says, you know, who remember, you know, he makes Brittany...
Everybody remember when Jax fucked Faith?
Yeah. And he makes Brittany cry, and when he's talking about it not with Jax around, he's like, I will never back down from anything I do. Do you think Kanye apologizes? I'm the white Kanye. You'll never get me. I'm an artist. I'm creative. And then the moment Jax confronts him, he's like, look, man, you know, it's not easy being me. I don't know why I did that. That's so Trump. That's so Trump. Like, just instantly backing down. Instantly, like, I'm you know, I'm a disaster. And that is a great scene because the moment that Jax walks away, when he's positive Jax isn't looking at him, he's like, bye-bye now. And Trump literally does that. Trump literally, have you seen, like, at his rallies when they throw someone out? He's like, yeah, bye-bye, go home to mommy. he's perfect. Yeah.
God, you're so right. I never, ever thought that. Like, when I was trying to think of, like, who is Trump, I was thinking, like, going to, like, Katie or someone. Because I'm...
I could see that.
Yeah, like, there's shades of Katie and Donald Trump. But, like, this James as Donald Trump is really blowing my mind.
It really didn't hit me until recently. I mean, he's just... There is an unpredictability to him that I don't think any of the other characters have. Like, the other... You can figure out what they're going to do. But he's just... It's like, how is he going to be awful in this situation? And that's... That's the president, you know. How is he gonna how is he gonna be enervating and cowardly, and just for no reason, seemingly?
God, if only like Donald Trump was as attractive as the cast of Vanderpump Rules, like maybe he wouldn't just be so awful.
Well, I think that should show. I mean, like James Kennedy, an attractive guy, but just still a rotten soul. I mean,
everyone on this show is like pretty much a demon at this point, like inside and out. But like, at least they're like West Hollywood hot, like reality star hot. Like Donald Trump has never even tried to be hot, and that's honestly offensive.
Well, he thinks he is, or he did at some point, which is incredible. But I think that the only redeemable character maybe is Peter. Now that I think about it, the closest one.
Peter is just like hardworking America. You know what I mean? Like, he's there.
The Rust Belt non-voter.
Yeah, he is the Rust Belt. He's just like showing up, clocking in every day, making sure Sir is running as planned and just like doing his job. And everyone else is like a nightmare.
Okay, so if there's just a composite of Trump, Peter would be like what people pretended John Kelly and H.R. McMaster's were. He was the general keeping everything in order.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I guess I don't know where that puts Lisa. I don't know.
Not American, so we don't even need to.
That's
like,
true.
Really
that's
worry
true.
About it. Yeah, she's just like Great Britain.
I guess that's the thing that's so incredible about it to me is that if you remove Lisa Vanderpump from this context, you would be like, you know, you go like, what the fuck? This is a stupid thing to call a restaurant, sexy unique restaurant. Why do you have this dog that you dress up? You would think this is a ridiculous person, but in the context of Jax Taylor and Stassi Schroeder and James Kennedy, and you're like, this person has their shit together so much. And I, you know, again, analogous to the world we live in, isn't that just any time Trump meets with, like, most foreign leaders, that's how we feel? Someone who removed from, like, Theresa May, has done a soundly awful job.
Mm-hmm.
But people are like, oh, well, you know, at least she's not glaring directly into the sun. She's really just got it together.
Yeah. It's like everyone compared to Trump, you're like, everyone else is like, well, it could be worse. We could have him.
Yeah. And I think there's another lesson in there that, you know, you can equivocate too much. At some point you have to pull back and see it all as ridiculous a little bit.
Yeah. But I mean, America is like a big reality show now. Like, I mean, that's where things were moving, I think, at the start of like his run for presidency. And then now it truly is just like, it's like a unraveling show every single day.
I think, you know, I think we've been going in that direction for quite some time, but I think the type of reality sort of corresponds with the era. So of course, not a perfect one-to-one match, because Vanderpump started under Obama, but okay, let's look at the reality metagame of the Bush era. It was hyper dramatized, like always music telling you what to feel. There was still sort of a hero's journey narrative arc to every reality show, and it was all about it was Straussian, actually. It was about you know, just everyday Americans trying to accomplish some incredible task,
mm-hmm,
to, you know, to show what Americans are made of, to have this purpose that gives meaning so we don't become too soft by the excesses of liberal democracy. And that was Survivor and so many other things. And it was perfect.
And lots of reality shows too. Like, I'm thinking back to like Celebrity Rehab, like Flavor of Love, Rock of Love, and it's all about like trying to overcome, as you were saying, and like win the grand prize, which is like dating Flava Flav or like Bret Michaels. But still, like, things shifted in Obama era where it was like, oh, now we're going to study these certain groups of people and see how fucking ridiculous and stupid they are. And I feel like that like headspace definitely bled into politics, just as far as like when Trump is running, you're like, oh my God, he's such an idiot. Like, he'll never win this election. And then lo and behold.
It's exact. Yes. Wow. The thing with the Bush reality shows is like, it's like, do you remember that period? I mean, it still goes on, but I think it was hyper. It was a huge thing under Bush where every like wacky, you know, comedy, the moral arc of it was that someone didn't get an abortion. That's what the movie Knocked Up is. The supposedly, you know, crazy Judd Apatow comedy. She doesn't get an abortion. Just this totally fine, okay thing to do that millions of people do. Just no one ever got an abortion in those movies during the Bush years.
Yeah, and it wasn't even like an option or like spoken about. It was like, oh, that's just not happening.
You know, people always talk about how much culture affects politics, but really, I sometimes believe that it's, I don't think it's a one-to-one, I don't think it's a binary choice, but I think often the politics affects culture and people in ways that makers of culture don't realize it's happening. And I think that affected you see that in the culture during the Bush years, like that, and like the reality shows. It was like, all right, you know, this is a fucking idiotic, craven spectacle that we're actually doing because this is so big now because of a labor dispute, because we don't want to pay screenwriters more. We're going to have more reality TV, but we're going to make it noble because, oh yeah, these Dr. Drew is going to fix these people's drug addictions, or these people are going to find love. And it was just as fraudulent as faith-based initiatives or this defense of marriage by the right as a attempted wedge issue at that time. But with Obama, something weird happened from Obama to Trump in that metagame, I think, in that something started a little postmodern and then became completely straight up. I think that reality under Obama, it sort of started with Jersey Shore, and it was for the first time really in America, this understood thing of like, these people are absolutely ridiculous. Let's look at them. We know this is absurd. It's funny. We're laughing at these people. And
but they create a culture too. Like they have their own like language, and then you make fun of it, but you adopt it. And like, it was the first time I really truly got obsessed with people from a reality TV show. Like, I remember like Jersey Shore, I went out and found, like, I considered them to be celebrities. They were my Brangelina. Like, I went and stalked them, found them at like a Hollywood nightclub, and it was like next level for me.
You were there with them.
They would come to LA a lot, like in the very beginning, like right when the show started and it hadn't really like blown up yet. Cause I think it took like a few weeks for everyone to kind of catch on, but I was like in it to win it from day one. And so they'd come to LA and tweet out where they were going to be.
Yeah.
Cause like no one really cared about them or like followed them, but me and my friends who like friended them on Facebook and like got in on the ground level. And then one weekend we just like, when I left work on a Friday and I was like, this weekend I'm going to find situation. I'm going to take a photo kissing him on the cheek. Like, I'll see you guys on Monday. And then Saturday night went out, like by the powers of social media, found out where they were, like sweet talked my way into a club right at last call and like got the photo.
But yeah, that's incredible. I mean, that that was unthinkable in the Bush era of as the culture became more interactive. Yeah, because there was like the only time you'd hear about the reality stars outside of the context of their show would be if they had just done something comically inept and stupid, like John and Kate, or though I could be getting this wrong. Am I getting this wrong? Was that under the early years of Obama? Am I screwing up my chronology?
I never really engaged with John and Kate. Like they were, but they were also on that different level of reality type of stars that were like, you don't want to hang out with them. Like you might want to watch them, but you wouldn't want to be around them.
Well, they may have been like the last reality stars like as they in that mold, because everyone after that was just
out,
the last trad reality stars, and we saw how that went.
But it like crashed and burned. They did like kind of shift from these people trying to do a noble thing, which was like raise 8 children.
Noble at all. It's so Bush. It's
actually a huge waste. And then turned into those people that are just like sad. We make fun of them, like how crazy they are and like their sad relationship, blah, blah, blah.
But then everything we make fun of John for and Kate, we are gripped when Stassi or Jax or anyone on Jersey Shore, any of them do it because they're sold to us as that. They're immediately, the first time we see them, they're sold to us as ridiculous people who do completely amoral things. It is interesting though, right? Like we start out as let's look at these ridiculous people, and then not only does that become the culture, we are all the ridiculous people, all of us.
Yeah.
We are in the beach house. We are always we're in the sexy, unique country. Always. We can't escape it at any time. Yeah. The president of Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro, he was like, in Brazilian right-wing politics, he was like Jax Taylor. Sort of, or James Kennedy. Mm-hmm. They would just have him on like news panel shows, and he would just say ridiculous, insane shit. He literally got on there. He literally got on one show and took a polygraph test and talked about fucking farm animals when he was an adolescent. No reason. And now he's president. And it's just like you could think that you're in on the joke or that, you know, you'll never get consumed by the spectacle. But if conditions keep deteriorating around you, you will just take the form of the spectacle, I think.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to us.
Yeah. It's interesting now, too, with Vanderpump Rules, because I feel like there's been a shift and that like the cast is like legitimately they're like famous, like reality TV stars now. Like they have money, they have influence and power. Like I feel like this season more than ever, they're really like in charge of the way they're being portrayed on camera and in charge of their storylines in ways that they weren't able yes. to have like agency over in the past. And I don't like it, quite frankly.
It is a lot duller, right? I was noticing that. Yeah. I was noticing that this season. I don't, unless there is some great wresting of power by the producers from the stars, I don't think we'll see another thing like the Vegas storyline ever again.
Yeah, or even like last season was still wild. Like when Jax admitted that he fucked Faith and like the whole yes. way that they had had sex was revealed like in front of that like dying hospice patient or whatnot that she was like caring for. Like I feel like that was the final swan song of like true Vanderpump behavior. And now we're getting like, we're going to have to like really read between the lines for the rest of time to figure out what's going on. I don't know.
I completely agree. I was thinking about it. I was thinking about like, well, you just by process of deduction, you have to figure Jax is currently cheating on Brittany, probably as we speak.
Oh, yeah.
In some way or the
100%.
Other. 100%. If you had to make an assumption, it's either a yes or no choice. You're going to assume, yes, he is. But in its current form, would we know that? And I would like everyone to be happy. Brittany seems like actually a very nice person. But for the purposes of watching, if we assume he is doing this, we would like to see it play out similar to last season and every time before that. But it seems like they are being portrayed in exactly as the way they want. Stassi alone, it's just like there's such a tonal shift in her scenes from being sort of psycho and very controlling and sort of taking pleasure in executing power on others in their very small hierarchy to someone who's, you know, she's just trying to keep James in line. She's trying to keep everyone happy. And maybe, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just people do get older. Maybe you do change your behavior if you see it reflected on TV and millions of people watch it. But I am generally pessimistic about how much people can change. So I think it just, you know, they got more control over how they look. You're right.
Yeah. And I wonder too, like, to bring it back to like the Trump era of it all is like, because we're still early in like the Trump era, I feel like, with as far as like reality television and like pop culture is concerned. And part of the joy of Vanderpump Rules is like seeing these ridiculous people like basically get trolled by their job, which is like being on TV, because they just look like idiots all the time. And you're just like, oh my God, these people are so insane, but I love it. And they're like, they're not necessarily held accountable for their actions, like from a consequences standpoint, but they are from like the fact that they're just exposed on air. But when they're not anymore, like, is that the era that we're moving into where people just act crazy and no one even like tries to like troll them or expose them? Cause I feel like we're being fed this line, like Jax has changed, Stassi has changed, like everyone's friends now. And like, that's that. And like, we know that that can't be true, yet like we're just going to be told over and over that it is.
I think that there's an ebb and flow with that, both in politics and entertainment now, because we all have two desires, I think, and one is to feel normal and one is to feel excited. And there is, you can't underestimate the feeling within people, how badly they want everything to feel normal, which I understand a great deal why that would be their number one priority. Of course, I think there are priorities over just feeling normal and alongside it, but I get it. And I think with this, maybe the world of Sir is responding to that desire for norms to return, for things to be regular again, for there to be repercussions for actions, for there to be condemnations and temporary exclusions. It's kind of actually similar to when, you know, there's a State of the Union or there's a presidential address, mm-hmm. or it's whatever outrageous, you know, right-wing newly elected leader. Oh, they're going to Davos. What are they going to say? Oh my God. Are they going to say that, you know, are they going to say that absurd thing that they said in that interview? Or are they going to back that up? And they just, they go, Trump goes, Bolsonaro goes, Renzi goes, whoever goes. And it just, it's the same as if anyone else did it, right? Because for all our breakings of norms that really excite us, there is a desire by everyone to feel normal. And in the end, the form eventually wins out. The parts of the norm, not the ones that make you feel normal, but the ones that make the people above you feel normal, those are more important. And you're going to get around the margins some more ridiculous behavior, and you're going to get some more things that made you notice in the first place. But it's going to keep going back to that. So you get both the lack of excitement and you get the continued awfulness that existed before it.
I could talk about this forever, and just relating Vanderpump Rules back to like the current state of the world. But I feel like we should get into this week's episode because there's a lot to unpack there.
I feel like people are going to get mad at me. It's going to be like when, you know, people tell people who make Harry Potter references, read a different show, read a different book. They're going to tell me to watch a different show if I keep doing this.
Okay. So this episode starts out with Sir hosting brunch with Billie Lee. And I just like was internally feeling like woof at the thought of eating brunch at Sir. Have you ever been to any of the Vanderpump restaurants?
I wish. The last time I was in LA, I didn't watch yet, but I at this point I have to know 5 people who have gone to Sir. At least, but I would like, next time I'm there, I'm going to do it.
Yes, you have to like pop your Sir cherry. I mean, I think you should just do like a walkthrough of that and like a walkthrough of Pump, but then eat at Tom Tom, because that truly is like, that's the real gem of like the Vanderpump.
Tom Tom seems to be, it's, if Sir is Great Britain, Tom Tom is the 13 colonies.
Exactly. But like Sir's food is just like terrible. Like I've never had a good meal there ever. And I've eaten there enough times to have like maybe by default had one delicious thing, and it's just like not happening. So the thought of them like introducing eggs to the mix is really like unsettling.
Oh, that sounds, oh yeah, that could go horribly wrong. How many times have you eaten it, Sir?
I've probably eaten it, Sir, like 5 or 6 times.
Holy and shit. Then,
yeah. And then Pump, like even more than that. And currently my count of Tom Tom, I'm like, I should maybe be embarrassed to say this, but I don't know. I've eaten there 8 times.
Holy shit.
So I feel like I love, like Tom Tom is my favorite restaurant. I don't know. I guess it is just by default.
Is the quality better?
Yes, like it definitely goes back and forth. Like the last time I was there, I ordered the same cocktail but got different variations of it each time it was like delivered to the table. So certain things like that remain very consistent, where it's like you never know what you're really going to get. But there are items on the menu that I like crave. Like they have these like buffalo, like spicy cauliflower buffalo wings that taste just like a, it's like an orange, it's like a buffalo wing fried with like an orange chicken or like a sesame glaze. It's delicious.
All right. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, why is it better?
Why is the food better? Or why is
yeah? Why do you? Better? Yeah. Why do you think the food is better than Sir? Because this always it interests me why Sir is so bad. Because that's what I consistently hear about it.
Yeah, I don't. I actually don't know. That's a great question. But just like I don't know if they have like a real chef this time around or what. Like I'm really unclear on why one restaurant would be better. Because I would assume that they're getting the same like food provider or like wholesaler or whatever, however the fuck they buy their food. I doubt it's like farm to table. Like I'm sure that person, whoever it is, delivers to all three restaurants because they're on the same block as each other. So I don't know why one's food would be better than the others.
Yeah, it defies reason.
Yeah, there's a lot of mysterious things about like Lisa Vanderpump's restaurant career and like these restaurants.
She's like, yeah, I cannot get a bead on her. She's definitely someone who benefits from the people around her being the way that they are. That is the biggest thing with her. Like, because, you know, if they weren't, you'd be going, what the fuck is up with this person?
I know. And there's a moment in this episode where she's like, if I based every decision on money, Jax Taylor wouldn't be here. And it's like, no, that's a lie. Like, you do base everything on money, and that's why Jax is, like, in your world and in your universe.
Yeah, Jax is like, well, they can't break character. They have to pretend that they're just running around. That's the funniest thing about it, and that's what makes it the most like our politics, is that they're pretending they're just running a restaurant. That's it. Nothing else. They can't break the fourth wall. But it's like, yeah, Jax was, I mean, for me, Jax is the character that sucked me in. He's just so, there's like a type of completely amoral liar who thinks that they're a lot smarter than they are. That is so, I've been trying to capture for so many years, and it just enamors so many people. And he's the most perfect version of it I've seen on reality TV. He's the perfect guy, and his life is such a, the way he makes decisions and justifies them is it's unmatched in the genre right now.
Yeah, he's the number one guy in the group for.
Yes, he was right when he said that. That's such a Trump thing where you say something. It's like when he says something that's just so fucking ridiculous, but it's like technically. The once in a while he says something that's like technically right, you're like, oh, well, okay. I guess in one way of interpreting, yeah.
And I love like you can see the wheels turning in his head like as things are happening, like all just through his like eye movements and stuff. And like watching him just like process life is truly fascinating.
I think if I could save any moment ever, it would be the reunion season 6 when they – just the moment they ask him what he thinks of the Me Too movement. Wish I could save that for it. I wish I could set an alarm clock to that every morning I wake up. It's that.
You could make it like a ringtone or a text message tone for sure. Cause I forgot what he even said because it was honestly just like so offended. I was just like, oh my god, I can't.
Or when they asked him about Nelson Mandela. Whoever was in charge of writing those questions, my god, yeah. That person needs a fucking award.
Yeah, props. I mean, Vanderpump is like, it needs to start being nominated for, it might be too late because it's not as good as past seasons, but like, it definitely is deserving of like Emmy nominations and like Golden Globe nominations.
So yeah, it would be Kathryn Bigelow as a director, maybe the best at like filming the human condition, showing it through lighting and framing, just get it, giving that feeling. David Chase, maybe the best TV writer ever in writing the human condition, but Vanderpump, the greatest at showing you it.
Exactly.
They're in that pantheon.
I like that you put it on par with Sopranos because I'm like watching Sopranos for the first time, like doing a huge binge, and I'm just truly like, this and Vanderpump Rules are just the pinnacle of television for me.
You've never seen? Oh, I'm jealous of you. I think I'm on rewatch number 5. I'm in the midst of it. It's interesting you bring it up because I think that America has a very unusual unusually optimistic pop culture outside of like, you know, a totalitarian government where the government controls every bit of media, and it's just about how great it is to be there, and it's about historical national heroes and everything. We're just so positive. You look at our biggest movies; they're all superhero movies about, you know, how great it is to be friends and believe in yourself, and all our sitcoms are just about, you know, people figuring it out. Except our big thing, our reality is on par with like British comedy or something else. It's incredibly pessimistic, and it's closer to The Sopranos than like, you know, fucking How I Met Your Mother or something. It's so about like the cruelness and transactionalism of human experience. It's a lot like The Sopranos. I mean, yeah,
it's dark and nuanced, and you feel like you know these people so well. Like, you can tell what they're thinking and feeling at any given time. Like, I feel like I know the cast of Vanderpump Rules better than they know themselves.
Yeah. No, 100% you do, because I don't feel like they have a very diluted image of themselves. Exactly. Except for like maybe like,
not like such a huge claim, actually, because now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, well, probably anyone that watches this show knows them better than they know themselves.
Except for Ariana, maybe. That's it.
Yeah, Ariana remains an eternal mystery.
She seems like a cool person to me.
She is cool, and she's, I feel like in regards to the show, she's kind of played her cards right, because like, she's like, if she wanted to be an actress after all this is said and done, I truly believe that she could be one, because it's like, we just don't know that much about her personal life.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, like everyone else is like, I could never see Sheena or Lala, for that matter, as anyone but Sheena or Lala.
Yeah, no, they're all, she's the only one who could make it out of purgatory. Oh, yeah, but the episode... I'm sorry, I keep derailing us.
No, it's fine. James shows up to brunch to say hi to Billie Lee, and he came to support her for her brunch. What a noble friend.
Good for James. I'm sure that, yeah, you know, no ulterior motive, nothing weird going on here. Just above board, as always.
And I love that he's like constantly reminding everyone of how he's sober when it's been now like 11 days. Like, it's like... He's like, no drinks to me, like, just iced tea, sober still, can you believe? And then, like, says a very awkward hello to Billy and then is gone. It's like, James, we got your number. Like, we know, like, it's not, the jig isn't up yet. You know what I mean? Like, as soon as he was going to get his job back, he's going to start drinking again.
Well, I love just, like, he's such a goblin, and it's just, like, you really see the gears turn in his head, because he's like, oh, if I just make a big show of how I'm not drinking, people are going to go, oh, all the bad stuff James has done was because he was drunk. And if I just don't drink, they'll be like, oh, James is great. But he's still, like, awful. He still fucking sucks. He's still a terrible guy, so it's not working like he thinks it would.
It kind of works for me, because I truly, like, I have more sympathy for James than just, like, writing him off as, like, a bad guy. Like, I feel like his life is very, like, dark and sad, and he has a lot of demons, and, like, his alcoholism / potential drug addictions, like, make it much worse. But I just, he's so, like, he wants to be included and, like, accepted so badly. I think more kind of than anyone else on the show.
He's, like, it shows how young he is compared to everyone else, because, you know, I'd say the closest in previous behavior to James would be Jax. But Jax was always, like, he was always ready to justify his action, always like, yeah, what do you want? You know, like, how could you do that to your best friend? I wouldn't really call him a friend. Just instantly, he's got that thing. There's a gift. Only a small percentage of the population has this gift. I've talked about it before. The ability to never feel embarrassed. And yeah, it is amazing how far you can get in life if you just have that quality. Because you can just do anything. You'll be like, yeah, I was right. Or like, I never did that. Or that never. Just keep you. It's amazing. People are so self-involved and have to worry about themselves so much. If you just plow through and you're like, yeah, whatever, you can accomplish nearly anything in a small scale. But James pretends he has that, but he doesn't. He's incredibly self-conscious. He's in,
oh, so self-conscious.
He wants that Kanye thing because it's like, yeah, I'm like Kanye. Well, but it's like Kanye, I wouldn't say he's someone who isn't self-conscious at all, but he's able to bite down and plow through. And he also has an incredible, he's a set of incredible talents that James does not have. But yeah, it's, yeah, it is, you're right. It is hard not to feel bad for him. I think a lot of people have been in that, especially when you're like 21 or 22, just a kind of a fucking awful age to be. Cause I mean, I can only speak for myself, but I was not good at anything. And you just want to be that way. You wish you were like Jax. You wish you could be like, yeah, fucking whatever.
Yeah.
Who cares? I was right. You wish you could do it.
Jax has just been that way from day one.
Yeah. Yeah. You either,
unashamed.
You're born able to do that or you're not. And it just, you know, you, if people have kids, they hope that they're like compassionate and resilient and intelligent people. But if they're not any of those things, you would hope that they have the thing where they never get embarrassed. That's the second best thing they could have.
Yeah. They're either like great, amazing people or they're jacks.
Yeah. And that's both will fine. Serve
them well. Yeah.
But he is like, I did always laugh at the thing with him, with James, where it was like his life for a few episodes was utterly destroyed by the prospect of his parents getting separated, which, okay, I'm sorry if this comes off as heartless, but I think that's, to be 22 or 23 and for that to just devastate you that much is a little like, I don't know. I think it's, you're searching for an excuse for why you are a certain way at some point.
Or there are like really like underlying issues that are getting like brought up by this that need to be dealt with that are like more, that are go deeper than just like, oh, my parents are breaking up.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. You're right. Probably like, something deeper.
He could use like a healthy dose of therapy, James Kennedy.
Yeah, oh, 100%.
Stassi has bought herself a holiday, National OOTD Day, and she's getting ready for her big part, like holiday party. And at first, like when I didn't know that you could just like buy a holiday. Did you know that?
I had no idea, but it actually makes a lot of sense. You know, yeah. You see a lot of bullshit, hey, it's hot dog day or whatever, and it's like, oh, what a surprise, the hot dog council paid for it, and no one's stopping you from doing it. It's the new buying a star, I think.
Totally, because you have to pay for your star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame, which I didn't know until I moved out here. It costs like $30,000.
That's why Donald Trump did it.
Yeah.
but it is... Outfit of the day is so interesting to me because it's like, well, if you're just outfit of the day, that's something you do. If you do that, you do that every day, right?
Yeah, I think
so. So why is it, what's the special day for it? It makes no sense. I feel like a Jehovah's Witness with this. It's like, why celebrate Christmas if we're celebrating Christ every day, you know?
I have like my own set of issues with National Outfit of the Day, but like when you start to break it down like that, it really, all the logic just completely falls apart.
It has no internal consistency. It doesn't. Good for her though, she did it.
I love Stassi like explaining her process. She's like, God, you know, like I really had to like work so hard on this. Like I had to Google how to like buy a holiday and then like call these people and like buy it. And you can tell for her that that was like actually like hard work to like do all that stuff. But like I want to buy a day and make it National Vanderpump Rules Day.
I'm actually surprised that doesn't exist.
I know. Like I mean, feel
you
like
could get it on the ground floor of this.
I gotta just get in now, yeah. And like that would be really major if I like started that out from under them.
Well, it's like they said about the gold rush. You didn't make money selling gold; you made money selling shovels. Same thing.
Yeah.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
The weather's getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to my jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul summertime without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic and comfy year after year.
Quince has it all, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more.
The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that.
As you know, I've been on my fitness journey in 2024, so I'm getting into athleisure wear a lot. I have Quince long sleeve shirts, shorts, t-shirts. I wear it to the gym. I wear it out. I wear it to Whole Foods. I wear it to 7-Eleven to buy my Diet Cokes. I'm wearing it all over town.
And people are noticing.
People are fucking noticing.
Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/sexyunique for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/sexyunique to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/sexyunique.
A new quarter brings new goals, but what about your skincare goals? Small, easy changes in your routine can have amazing results, and your secret weapon should be Dime Beauty.
Dime Beauty is clean, high-end skincare that is affordable, and it really works. Dime didn't sacrifice performance just to make it clean, either. And when I say clean, Dime is 100% transparent about every single ingredient, so you can use their products daily with confidence. I have been using Dime Beauty's TBT cream and their Dewy Daily Cream. TBT cream is a retinol alternative that I put on at night before I go to bed, and it's actually been making my skin look glowy and snatched, if I do say so myself.
I've noticed that, and I think our listeners have noticed too, because I've been picking up on a bunch of TikTok comments that have been like, you're glowing recently. So hats off to Dime. No one has time to remember the order of a 10-step skincare routine. The Work System from Dime Beauty has everything you need in one powerful package. It includes a gentle cleanser, a toner, two incredible serums, and two luxurious moisturizers.
Plus, my favorite, Dime's TBT cream, is finally back in stock. Check that out while you're there.
Dime has over 2 million happy customers, and their product reviews are literally all 5 stars. This year, love your skin again. Go to dimebeautyco.com now and unlock your discount. That's dimebeautyco.com. Bo is also getting ready for National OOTD Day parties, and his style, like, it's just so bad every time I see him.
Terrible.
It hurts me. Yeah. It's just like, and I kind of love their relationship. Like, I think that they're a good match for each other, Bo and Stassi, but his fashion is problematic.
It is. Yeah. You know, it's sometimes for what I don't know what makes Stassi tick, but whatever it does, it seems to match well with Bo, which is, I'm very happy for them. I'm incredibly, yeah. She seems legitimately incredible. I mean, I forget. I think it's early. Yeah. She cries talking about him. It's very nice, actually. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he wears overalls, and Stassi says, outfit of the day is about expressing yourself, being you, being comfortable, but not that.
Yeah.
But that's like, still.
If I ever wanted to explain the character of Stassi to people, which, you know, I don't fully understand. I think very few people do. I'm definitely not one of them. I would show them that clip.
What's also shocking is that once we get into the party of and like national outfit of the day is like underway and people are hashtagging their outfits of the day, you start to see all like a montage of everyone's outfits, and everyone's outfits are hideous.
They look terrible.
All bad. Like the whole cast of Vanderpump Rules shows up to the outfit of the day party wearing the most horrific outfits imaginable. Then all the people that they drummed up on Instagram, there was like one girl with like see-through purple pants and like underwear doing the splits. And I was just like, what is this? Like, this is just a day to wear the ugliest possible clothes you can muster up out of your closet and hashtag them. And everyone gets that privilege except for Bo.
Yeah, like, what is different about Bo? What's so much worse about what he's wearing than anyone else? Like, what Tom Sandoval was wearing was insane.
Tom was wearing, like, a kimono.
He was wearing a kimono and, like, a fucking Raiden from Mortal Kombat hat. It was insane. It was the most insane. Like, if someone I knew wore that, I'd be like, are you okay? I'm used to Tom doing shit like that. But yeah, it's what the fuck?
Schwartz's was wearing, did you see his shirt? Which was it was like a blazer, like a short sleeved blazer or something like that. Like, it was so confusing.
It looked like something Tony Soprano's dad would wear.
It's so Junior weird. Soprano. Yeah. For sure.
So there's a thing in Iran where they don't wear ties, right? Like, their mm-hmm. elected officials don't wear ties because a tie is associated with Western imperialism, they say. And I can't help – is there a similar thing going on with just massive pants for women in the world of Vanderpump Rules? It seems to be the dominating style, and you saw it in a big way on Outfit of the Day. There's just the most pants just in terms of volume, not amount, but volume of pants you have ever seen in one room, probably.
Yeah, just like a wide-legged pant.
I don't get it. Why is it? I don't get why it's. I know that it's a style, but it's just like everyone. No one would be like, oh, everyone else is going to be wearing huge pants and outfit of the day. Maybe no, they all love to do it. It they seems love comfortable. Good for them.
A long, huge pant, and then like a crop top of some sort, or like a tight, form fitting top.
That's the uniform.
Yeah, that's a uniform. Ariana's wearing like glitter, just like inexplicably covered in glitter throughout most of this episode. And like Sheena also was wearing a kimono. She was kind of on the more understated side of Outfit of the Day, which is saying a lot because she's serving that one look in her confessional that's like her wet hair and then like sexy secretary dress that is like shaking me to my core every time.
She usually makes incredibly puzzling choices, but there in that room, it was like, okay, this makes sense.
Yeah, everything like evened out, and Sheena was the one person that dressed like kind of okay on Outfit of the Day. Billie Lee, though, was also dressed well, I thought. And she says prior to the Outfit of the Day party, she says she's holding court at Sir and she's all about good vibes. And then she's very miffed when Katie and Kristen come to Sir to like voluntarily eat brunch there.
Yeah, no, the good vibes dissipated incredibly quickly.
Fast. She said Kristen's energy smells like dog shit.
Yeah, I mean,
which like she's not necessarily wrong.
Yeah, she's got it. It was like, she's got it.
You are hostile.
Well, yeah, no, that just shows there was never an attempt at good vibes.
No.
Yes, that whole thing with Billy and everyone else, it was, again, I think we would have benefited from more context if the stars of the show had less control over their portrayal. I feel like we're missing a step there.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it was entirely the girls' night out there. I don't think it was a little bit that, but I think there was something we missed. It seemed to me like there was something.
Yeah, because it was like, the situation escalated from 0 to 60 for seemingly no reason.
Yeah, there was definitely a missing puzzle piece there. I would pay for Vanderpump Premium.
I know. I'm like, what is it going to cost? Like, I will pay whatever it is. Billie Lee. Also, I just like loved her Palo Santo moment where she was like getting extremely spiritual, like willing Kristen away from her. Cause that's an element of the show we haven't really gotten to experience yet, is like just like mysticism.
Yeah. Yeah. I have wondered who is the most likely to get into Kabbalah out of anyone.
Into Kabbalah?
Yeah, out of the entire cast.
I feel like Kristen could get there. I feel like Kristen.
I can see it. Yeah. That's probably the best. Yeah.
Facade is like cracking somewhat. Like, especially after the last episode, like, I thought for so long, like, Kristen had kind of come a long way out of the whole cast, and she was like a real survivor. And like, I respected the journey she'd been on from just getting raked over the coals, like season 2 and 3, to then like rebuilding her life and like having this t-shirt line and whatnot. But then last week's episode, I realized that Kristen is the same bitch she's always been.
New year, new me. Yeah. No, like, it's just, yeah, nothing ever changes.
Nothing. She hates Stassi still with the same sort of like undermining hatred that she had for her in season 1. Like, she, the dynamics are all the same. She just managed to kind of hide whatever was going on from us. I think because she has her boyfriends like mostly kept off camera. So not having a glimpse into Kristen's like personal, like sexual relationships really shields her from a lot of like viewer judgment. But I was like, I felt tricked.
I feel like this is the season of a million false leads and empty spaces that we have to deduce. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more powers of deduction than I ever thought I would have to put into the show, but I'm doing it anyway.
Oh yeah. I'm like, well, I'm here for it, but I don't love it. Brittany says that Brittany is really nervous. Okay, this is another like power of deduction moment, because I'm like, what the fuck is Brittany like flipping out about? Like, she's so upset and like goes off in this episode, which I think there's like more happening than what meets the eye. But it starts out with her saying that she hates that she had words with Lisa, and the thought of Lisa being like mad at her makes her feel like she's gonna poop out her stomach.
Yes, this was, yeah, there is like, I mean, Brittany,
what does that mean? Even
it seems like one of those sort of season 1, season 2 Stassi phrases, the Stassi threats, but just done by too nice of a person to do that.
It's like a Kentucky. It's her Kentucky thing coming.
It might be. It might be. I just, yeah, it that one, I had to chew on that one for a second. I still don't think I have it.
Lala reveals to the girls that she is going to go into the studio with James, and Katie immediately like gets very upset, and she's like, what happened to everyone getting together to plan girls' night? And then Kristen jumps in. And then Lala decides that she's not going to go to the stew after all. And I was just like, Lala, you're being played.
Lala is, I guess we have to add a fourth character to someone who has the Trump characteristics, who could, you make a full Trump out of these characters. Lala's in there. Mm-hmm. She's just, you know, I would like to know her sign. I would like to know if she's a fellow Gemini. Because I feel like...
Do you know that there's... I don't think that there are... Are you a Gemini too?
I am.
Oh, same. So I don't think that there are other Gemini cast members. Peter might be a Gemini, actually.
He might, yeah. He
But I think he's the only one.
I don't know. She just has that thing where she can be very... You sway her and she's just very strong in that direction.
Yeah. And also from like following her social media and stuff and like seeing everyone, like obviously she's with Rand. He mm-hmm. flies people around on his private jet, and she's like very tight with the cast now, and they all fly on the jet like to go to Vegas and stuff. And I'm just like, would they all have been friends were it not for Lala's man's private jet?
No, absolutely not.
And like 100%. The fact that Lala does not see that clearly, like, it's not like she has to stop being friends with them, but it's like, let's like call a spade here. Like you're serving a purpose. Like this, everyone's getting something out of this relationship. This is not just like some organic friendship.
Not, I don't think, are any of the friendships organic? I mean, maybe the two Toms, that's it. But
the two Toms, and like, I think Stassi and Katie's friendship.
Okay, yeah.
Weirdly organic.
I was actually looking up Rand the other day, and I do not know how looking at the movies he's produced, I do not know how he affords a private jet. I don't know. I don't know too much about movie producing, but holy shit, I guess he can just make a lot of money not even making a huge hit, right? Incredible. Good for Rand.
I don't know how it works either, but like, I know that after last week when Lala was like driving his Rolls Royce, some company tweeted out, they were like, does Lala know Daddy's Rolls Royce is rented? Like, is
the, okay, like, yeah, trying that to makes blow a the ton whistle. Of sense. Yeah.
I think it's like a lot of stuff like that.
I saw a picture of Rand and Lala at the red carpet, and Rand was wearing the, you know, 50-year-old fighting the clock look. Mm-hmm. This is the most tragic West Hollywood look. It's the guy, you know, with a few million dollars, but he can't fight that he's 50. And he's wearing like a fitted button up shirt, selvedge jeans, and Jordans. Yeah. And it's like, that's just, you hate to see that. You absolutely hate to see that. And I can see Rand not having enough money to own a private jet, but maybe spending $30,000 a pop to charter one to and from Vegas. And that is, and renting a Rolls Royce and like, yep.
Yeah. Like, I think Vegas is one of the cheapest places that you can like charter a private jet from LA. It's like that in Palm Springs are probably, if you're making like a few mil a year, relatively affordable.
How much? Okay, so I could be overestimating it. I mean, I know it's like $30,000 to charter one for some destinations, but yeah, LA to Vegas is probably a lot cheaper.
Yeah, because it's really only like a 45-minute flight or something like that.
Yeah.
So you're not having to like gas up the jet like for like a cross-country mission.
Still, it shouldn't be a regular habit. I mean, none of this should be. But yeah. It's just, yeah, I feel like Rand is fighting the clock very, very hard, but you can never beat the clock, ever.
Never.
It's very tragic.
Meanwhile, at Outfit of the Day, Stassi is like kind of sidebarring with Bo, and she goes, it's so weird that all these people are out there taking pictures of their outfits. And I was like, internally, I was like, is it that weird? Like, that's what people do, like on social media and everywhere.
Yeah, that's how people are familiar with this concept. That's how you could write a book and make a holiday.
Yeah. Basking the glory of like launching Outfit of the Day and like so shocked that it's like resonated with a larger community. And I'm like, aim higher. I think Brittany is very codependent, and that like becomes very clear when she kind of like sidebars with Lisa and tries to like right the wrong of like speaking up for herself. Like she's like, I'm sorry, I spoke my mind, and like, I don't want you to be mad at me, and like all this stuff.
Brittany, I don't know. I feel like part of it is like she is enmeshed in this insane world. But again, we're in a Nine Inch Nails Closer video, slide missing, scene missing. Scene missing over and over and over again. I feel like sometimes you get to a scene and Brittany's like spooked in a way.
Yeah, she's very spooked. Like, what's
spooked? Yeah, something. Yeah, I would like to know what put her on edge here. She could just generally be on edge because of James, but there's something we're missing. I know it. I just know it. I fucking know it.
Yeah, there's something, there really is, like, and she is definitely spooked, like, and also she's, like, pointing her finger, like, I didn't catch this until my second time around, but she's, like, pointing her finger in Lisa's face, and then Lisa's, like, very sternly is, like, don't point your finger in my face right now.
Yeah.
Which is, like, kind of a shocking and sobering moment.
Sometimes Lisa, I notice this, will... Again, it's like training dogs. It's like training her very small dogs. Assert who the alpha is.
And that was that moment for sure. Then we cut to Brittany's like one-on-one talking heads moment, and her hair, like this whole disco kind of like Donna Summer lion's mane like hair look was truly jarring to me.
Britney makes some odd stylistic choices.
Yeah. I mean, she always has, but this one was like, wow.
Yeah, it was. I don't know how she picked that one. I don't know. I don't know the most about women's hairstyles, but it was. I mean, you got to give it to her. You got to give it to her in this respect. You're not going to see that anywhere else.
No.
Around her.
She's making a splash.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just not going to see that at all.
And she says that now that she and Jax are engaged, he's making her look bad, as though like he hasn't always just made her look bad.
Right. That was that was one of those things that got under my radar where it was like the first time I hear it, I'm like, OK, that kind of makes sense. It's like. But then, yeah, the more you look at it, you're like, why would it be different? Because it's like, okay, if Jax does something awful while they're just dating, Jax does everything he does, and it's just, that's Brittany's boyfriend. What special property does being engaged? She's definitely from a different world than they are, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, this is like this kind of Southern conservative part of
her. Yeah.
Like, truly believes that everything, once you have like a ring on your finger, like that changes everything. And it's just like, we don't live in that kind of world anymore. Like, it truly is more meaningless than ever before.
Yeah, it completely. I mean, especially on that show and that world. But it's there. You saw it. I mean, the engagement was just like, for all the cast members, it's just, it's another secret. It's another event where they can, Tom Schwartz can take 6 half shots. It's just, it's everything else. But for her, it's completely, and of course it's life upending. Of course it changes your life, but it changes the characteristic of all her interactions when it clearly does that for no one else. Yeah, for everyone else, it means business as usual. It's just someday in the next year, they're all going to take 12 half shots.
Yeah, they're going to have to like go to Kentucky for like a weekend and then they'll be able to like get back to their regularly scheduled programming. But like Brittany, I think she just truly believes, and I think she thought that everyone would get on board with her journey once there was like a proposal. And she's very miffed that like people are questioning it. And I'm like, how can you honestly be that like dumb in a way? I mean, I think it's like she really needs therapy. I just am like, Brittany, honey, like, what is going on?
I don't know. I, on one hand, you want her to be inured from the bizarre social dynamics and awful world that she is in. But on the other hand, you don't want her to lose her character. She is an innocent compared to everyone else. I don't know what you can do. I don't know what you can do in that.
I don't know either. And I think the point where, because like later on in the episode when she starts to flip out for no reason and she's like screaming at everyone and like jumping up and down. And there's a point where she's in the hallway and she's like, I'm not going to do this shit with my relationship again, not doing it. And I feel like she was talking to producers or whoever was like behind the camera. I don't think she was talking to like Sheena in that moment.
It's almost Lynchian at this point. I want to know who the characters are talking to and why, because I don't believe they're talking to who you're telling me they're talking to, or I don't believe that they're managing the situation you say they are. Yeah. I feel like this is going to be like Lynch's Dune, where I have to pay for a recut. Fine, I'll do it. I already bought this fucking season because I don't have cable. I'll pay $50 for the uncut season. Just give me all this context I'm missing.
Yeah, like they need to release like a supplementary season.
Maybe that's a scam. I mean, good play. People would buy it. If they did that,
because
people are catching on. They're going to fuck. Yeah. Yeah, they'll get my money if they do that.
This is like a fever dream at this point where like nothing is really adding up. James is at this studio called The Spot, and The Spot has a really amazing kind of like descriptive element under their logo. It says The Spot, where creatives can be creative.
So is that like a We Work type?
I have
like
no
a SoCal
idea.
We Work. It's like, that just, that is it just like a bunch of wall? is it a work studio or is it like a I can see that it's just like a bunch of walls that like Instagram influencers can take pictures in front of, right?
And like, I guess, record music if they want. I'm like, so where creatives can be creative is so perfectly like vague, but also like very Vanderpumpian.
And it's it's one of the most contentless fragments of sentences I've ever heard. That means nothing. I mean, all those like co-working and like co-creative whatever spaces, they benefit from having just a completely nonsense motto. So, oh, what's this about? You'll look it up and you'll become enthralled by their design or whatever. But that's even less than they usually give you. God, that means that's pointless.
Yeah.
They just said something pointless.
And James is paying out of pocket for his studio time. And I think it was really rude of Lala to flake on this.
Yeah, I mean, but I would probably do the same thing. Honestly. I mean, being in the studio with James, it just sounds like one of those things you passively agree to that becomes more horrifying the more real it gets.
Like, it's just easier to agree in the moment, and then you just need to flake to, like, protect yourself.
Yeah, well, because you can't, I mean, are you going to say no to James when he asks you?
No, yeah, I guess not. But I just, like, want them to record music together again. My motivation for them getting in the studio is just purely selfish.
I'm sympathetic to Lala in that, yeah, that's an impossible thing to say no to. Not because it's so attractive, but it's just like you don't say no to someone like that right when they ask you. But yeah, what is your play besides say yes and renege on it? That's it. This is completely it. That's the only play. There are very few things in life that work that are unambiguously you do that for. But that's one of them.
Yeah, you send Tom Sandoval in your place to just like play his trumpet.
Yeah, Tom and his trumpet are my proxy.
I live for James having to like pretend like he enjoys Sandoval's like trumpet playing and like that it's going to be like fun and chill to like work that into his music.
That's the performance of the year.
Yeah.
Him being into Sandoval's trumpet. That's Oscar or Emmys actually 2020. That's it.
That's the clip.
That another instance of this show being the human condition. The look on James's face looking at the trumpet. That's just getting through life.
It is. It's all of us in our struggle day to day.
Yeah. That should be the new cover for Carl of Nausgaard's My Struggle for the new reprint. It should be James Kennedy looking at the trumpet.
If only. And then Sandoval sitting down, like, once it's all said and done, and James is, like, I don't know, copying it to, like, a USB drive or whatever the fuck you do once you're done in the studio. And Sandoval's like, don't make it sound synthetic. Like, as if he knows, like, how to do any of this himself. It was, like, that was also one of my favorite parts.
Yeah, that was, and it's also, like, I had a lot of questions for that. Like, first of all, like, you can't make this type of music not sound synthetic. That's kind of the point of it. And also, like, what does he want? Does he want it like on FLAC? Is Tom like an audio nerd now? I don't get it. Yeah, it's one of those things people say where you just feel like they're trying to fill a beat that's lingering after a conversation. Just to letting people know, it's one of those things you say where you're just letting people know that you heard what they said or did, and you're trying to show that you can match input with output.
Mm-hmm.
Just pointless. Just a pointless thing. How could you take "Don't make it sound synthetic" and be like, ah, yeah, I'm gonna execute an action based on that?
Hey, this is what happens at the spot. You know, it's just creatives being creative.
That is okay. You know what? It comes full circle. That is creatives being creatives. Recording an EDM track with a trumpet and then telling someone not to make it synthetic while it's on the USB drive. That's the most creatives being creative shit, you know, you could do.
Ever. Yeah. And like what I love about the spot and like just this type of thing is like there's so many. This is like a nightmare LA moment, right? Like that just people gather at some place called the spot and then like make their horrific art and then just like spitball over it and feel like really accomplished about it at the end of the day.
Yeah, and then the world just never sees it.
The world never sees it, or the few people that are exposed to it are just like saddened and like never the same. And like the only kind of good thing that can come out of it is like kind of the secondhand, like getting to see it from a side of like having secondhand embarrassment on someone's behalf. But like this kind of shit is constantly percolating in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Los Angeles is
the spot, and we're all just like creatives being creative, but like on various levels.
That's what's amazing to me, is like it's an entire city, well, like a bunch of suburbs that are connected, all everyone waking up, huge portion of the population waking up every day, putting everything into something that there's a high likelihood that the most exposure it ever sees is something, a piece of art that people make fun of. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
But yet they go on. It's incredible. It's rolling that boulder up a hill. And that is creatives being creative. Again. Creatives
being creative.
It makes sense to me now. It's a genius motto. I fucking get it.
It is. Maybe the spot it is the jump off. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Genius. No, I believe in their mission now.
Genius is everywhere. So back at Katie's, all the girls are gathering to like get girls' night underway. And Lala decides that she's going to like have everyone take a picture of her tits for the flyer. And then, which is like fine and whatever. Like we've all seen Lala's boobs before. But she has this one, like there was one small soundbite where she was like taking her shirt off and she goes, "This is like Craigslist." And I was like, wait, what is that in reference to?
Okay, yeah. No, I think this may be one of those things, if we're lucky, we get to revisit it on the reunion episode at the end of the season. You know, well, we do know that, I don't know, maybe Lala was on Backpages or something. I don't know. Of course, I offer, you know, zero judgment for that, but I'm curious. It's her business whether she says it or not, but it was, yes, it stuck out at me. Yeah. It was something I had to rewind.
That too, the Craigslist comment. Okay, good. I'm glad I'm not the only one. Yeah, I was just very like, wait, what? Like, can we explore that a little bit more? It's like the faith thing with the hospice lady, where it's like, why are we not talking about this? Like, why are we diverting away from the most important issues? Brittany starts flipping out and she just asks the universe, like, when are people going to believe we are happy? And she's really on the brim and she's like losing her shit.
That's another instance of like, I believe that we missed something, because
yeah,
that just went, she actually did not get that much pushback, you know, saying, you know, her and Jax, that went smoother than I thought it would, of her announcing that her and Jax are engaged, right? That you would figure, okay, people, there's going to be more objections, but people more or less seemed pretty excited, pretty happy for them.
Yeah, they got
Did something happen? Did someone get to her? I don't know. I feel like either there's a poor editing job or there's just something that isn't in there for some reason. But yeah, she really, something spooked her again.
Then we get to what is maybe one of the wildest scenes of a reality show that I've seen in like recent years, which didn't stick out to me as like that insane. But the more and more I think about it, it's like, it's just utterly bonkers, which is Lala and Sheena's acting coach session.
That was okay. First thing everyone remembers from that is when Sheena says, you know, I think I can still play high school.
Yeah, I feel like I can still play college. And then it cuts. She says she's dusting off her acting chops and then she's gotten back with her old manager. And it cuts to a like a scene with her old manager, Richie. And there's some blonde with like a small dog sitting next to him, like that, I guess, I don't think is like in charge of managing Sheena's acting career, but is just like there as an accessory. And Sheena says, I feel like I could still play college. And Richie goes, we're also going to go after young mom roles.
Yeah. That entire scene. Well, they kind of sold me during that scene on Sheena as an actor a little bit.
The orgasm specifically sold
The orgasm specifically, but before that, when she's they're just doing their lines, because it's like, okay, do you remember the guy who plays AJ in The Sopranos, Robert Eiler? One of the greatest casting choices on TV in history, because there are some people you talk to in your life who just seem like bad actors, right? There's like, that's a type of dull affect that someone just seems like they're poorly reading lines. It's a real type of person. And I think Sheena could be great at that.
I mean,
it actually sold me a little bit for a very specific type of character.
Wow. Okay. So it definitely had the opposite effect on me.
I think most people, I may be the only one who thought that.
You're really optimistic about Sheena's acting career, and I love that for
you. I'm a typical American. I'm very, very optimistic.
I love this like improv scene where like Lala feels some sense of like superiority over Sheena, where in reality, like they both did a really shitty job.
Lala was acting like It was fuck. It was Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder talking to Ben Stiller. It was like that level of like, all right, let me show you how it's done. And they're just both completely nothing more than just regurgitating those lines. Just nothing.
Just nothing. Like, just the most like basic, like, unremarkable like dialogue that they're coming up with. But then Shannon, the acting coach, decides to give them the challenge of having an orgasm, and Sheena reveals she's never had an orgasm until last year when she had one, which is, she had revealed that on her podcast, and I had like listened to it maybe like a month or so ago, and I was chilled to the bone then, and I'm chilled to the bone just even being reminded of it.
At age 32, God. 33.
Yeah. Like, she, because she also sells herself as like this highly sexual person.
And LGBT icon.
Yeah. And yet she's been fucking for all these years and never achieving climax. It's just like, it's really dark to me.
I wish there could be a Kinsey study of the cast.
Yeah.
I would like to know if that's a common thing. Yeah. Maybe it's unusual for – that was a lot to take in. That was a lot to take in with the rest of that scene too.
And Sheena said on her podcast that she never masturbates. She just doesn't do it.
Okay. I did not
– Yeah.
So that's holy shit.
Added layer to this like wild puzzle.
That's holy fucking shit.
And like, so just think about that for like the rest of your week and like get back to me, because I don't know what to make of it really either. Like, we're all just living in this world where Sheena pulls the rug out from under us continually.
We've never needed a Kinsey study more. My fucking God.
Yeah. We need to like raise the money and get it happening. And then they proceed, Sheena and Lala both have fake orgasms on screen, and after they're both done, Shannon goes, "See, that wasn't so bad," which is like the creepiest thing to say to someone after you've like issued them this like acting challenge, which also is like, I've taken acting classes, like living in LA, I have a lot of friends that have taken acting classes. Like, no one asks you to have an orgasm in an acting class. Like, that's just like not a challenge.
Okay, good. I was very confused that was a common thing.
No, that's
like, I had no idea.
100% not a common thing. Like, I've never heard of such a thing.
That makes this even more insane.
It's insane.
So there was just no point. I mean, even if that was a thing, and even if they still did that scene, there's no point in revealing that information. You shouldn't. But the fact that it's not, you don't do that.
No, you don't do that. That's not like, you could just do, it would be less creepy if like Sheena and Lala were just hanging out and they decided to have like a funny like they were both like, let's fake an orgasm right now. And they just did it. But the fact that they're instructed by someone who's billing herself as like an acting professional, like coach, who's like urging them to do this. And then they're positing it as though like this is something that frequently happens in this environment. Like at first it didn't freak me out. And then I like got stoned last night and I just kept thinking about it and coming back to it. And I was like, this is insane.
What a fucking bizarre event.
It's not okay.
This is not okay at all.
No. We'll never be okay again. Mala says like she felt like she just came emotionally.
And why?
I don't know. I'm like, that's called you feel like lingering shame of being forced to do something that you shouldn't have ever had to do in the first place.
Also, I mean, Is that just her flexing her acting more? Like, I'm such a good actor, I pretty much came. Is that what that is? Like, maybe. She really believes in herself as an actor, so possibly.
Yeah, I think that she does, like, I think this is another moment, like, where Lala believes that she is, like, Robert De Niro.
Yeah, yeah. She's, like, the Daniel Day-Lewis of the fake orgasm scene.
Okay, so then we get to girls' night, which looks like a pretty, like, I mean, it gets really crowded. It's a big success. I remember when this was all going down in West Hollywood and people were really excited about it. But it also doesn't look as fun as, like, the See You Next Tuesday James Kennedy parties.
No, I mean, for all the things going against James, his events seem pretty fun. He really gets a certain type of energy going. Maybe he is, you know, white Kanye. There's a frenetic crowd participation in See You Next Tuesday that this did not have.
No, this had more just like people standing around kind of filming, and then it also looked like it was impossible to get a drink there. Like that was just like an option if you were.
Well, that is kind of what I think of when I think of LA. I think of like just huge rooms of people standing and just no one's able to get a drink. That's my mental image of it. So it is like it's a classic hangout.
It's on brand. Katie reveals that they worked so hard to put Girls Night together and they have like a sparkle bar and DJ Mickey, who they cut to, who is like, no James Kennedy.
Yeah, no, he didn't. He might as well, it might as well have just been a playlist.
Yeah.
He just doesn't bring the same energy.
He doesn't bring the energy. I would argue to say that he even brings the energy down.
Maybe they should have just gone with Spotify Discover Weekly or something.
Yeah. And when when Schwartz walks into Sir, he goes, this is peak Sir.
I mean, he's not totally wrong.
He's not.
I don't know peak, but well, I guess, and like if you're being derogatory, yes.
If it was like, but I feel like it's peak Sir in the sense that like Sir hasn't seen this kind of like action for years, like since they were probably like first working there. Because Katie says she's worked at Sir for a decade, and I think
oh
it
my
was,
god,
like, I know. Take that in for a moment.
There is just, you know, what we are lacking in. Exposition in this season, we get, this is David Lynch, we're getting these little nuggets along the way that are like harrowing and really make you go, wait, is everything as it appears? What's going on?
Yeah, it's not good. And so prior to this, Billy Lee had tweeted out, like while everyone was getting ready, Billie Lee tweeted out that she was left out of all the party planning and then like hashtagged a bunch of tweets like trans is beautiful. And then I guess like the big problem that everyone's having with her is that she was favoriting tweets of people that were calling all the other girls that worked at Sir transphobic.
Yes.
And so Katie says that she's never been anything but compassionate and supportive for Billie Lee. And then to like uphold that image of being like such a compassionate supporter, it just cuts to last year at Pride when Billie Lee goes, I'm Billie Lee and I'm transgender. And then Katie's in the background. She goes, woo, Billie! As though like that is her being like an ally. Yeah.
That's, you know, That's Stonewall. That's what Stonewall was.
Yeah.
Someone like, says I'm trans and then woo.
Yeah, and then a white girl with like fake eyelashes is like woo, yeah.
an icon.
Yeah. Girls' night is happening. Billy Lee is salty as fuck and then accuses everyone of having cis privilege. And then everyone says like cis privilege over and over. Many people don't know what that means, including Lala. And I don't know. What do you think of like the Billy Lee situation?
It's like I said, I feel like we're missing something. I feel like things exploded quite rapidly. And I'd like the missing scene, because usually in reality TV, enmity does not correspond to the exact events we saw before it, but there is something particularly I feel like there's one key missing scene to this episode, or maybe even this season, that could roll everything into place that I am not getting. I need to see this unfold more. I feel like maybe we'll get more pieces of it episode 8. I don't know yet. I'm not giving you great content by not giving you a definitive statement. But I don't have enough information.
Yeah, I'm looking for answers. Like, I'm like, was a producer like behind the scenes kind of poking and prodding Billy, trying to like inform her sense of injustice over this? Like, it's not.
That's how it feels.
Yeah, because I don't doubt that like Billy Lee probably felt like left out, or there's definitely a sense that it's like her versus these other girls, especially after like that staff meeting scene where she basically she brought up a good point, which is that Kristen does live to like come and like fuck everyone's lives up, and then like everyone kind of is against Billy Lee. But I'm like, when did this happen? Because we all went from being like best friends, like so supportive of Billy Lee's journey, to then being like, fuck her for opening her mouth about this one thing.
Right. And it's portrayed sort of as if she did that to start shit. They almost give her like a James Kennedy role in that. And it's like, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And they're kind of trying to spin it that way on social media too, and be like, this came out of nowhere, like blah, blah, blah. But like, I wouldn't be surprised if they're covering something up that's like more sinister than meets the eye.
This is another thing where we're going to have to wait till that fucking finale episode. Yeah. So they get you. So it's how they get you.
Kristen, I guess girls' night is a real success. And Lisa brings up to Katie, she's like, would you want to do this every Tuesday? Which they didn't end up doing every Tuesday. Like, this happened one time, maybe one other time, and then was just over, and there was no more see you next Tuesday or girls' night. But Kristen is like dancing around during her like talking head and like celebrating the fact that she's, I guess, helped bring James down. It still is like very unclear. But like, if I was Kristen, I would be really embarrassed about like that kind of behavior, because it just is a bad look. Like, her hatred for James is just not aging well.
Yeah, I mean, there is a metagame to being hated that I think James understands, where you could sort of play the waiting game, and if someone hates you long enough, you just make them look insane or like a bad person. Mm-hmm. I think James is quite used to making people hate him, and he understands this game very well.
Yeah.
She's just, yeah. Kristen, she's got to figure out a play here to get out of this.
Did you hear the rumors, like, before the season started filming that Kristen was being demoted to, like, friend of the cast?
I did not hear that.
So that was, like, the big rumor, was that Kristen was going to be demoted. And, like, it even, I think, got announced on some sort of, like, publication. And then I guess the whole cast, or like all the girls, kind of rallied around her and said, like, we won't not film with Kristen, and like made sure she was invited to every single outing and like filming session. But like, I feel like this is Kristen trying to like have some sort of relevancy, like going back to the like takedown of James storyline. But I'm just like, it's not working for me anymore.
We need some decisive action in the next three episodes. very badly. I think the end of season six sort of portended badly for the action of this season. But yeah, we need the play of a lifetime in these next 90 minutes, very crucially.
We very much do. Billy Lee has a one-on-one with Lisa, and she's fully on one, but also kind of right. Like, I don't think Billy Lee is totally in the wrong when she says, like, Katie gets to, like, whine and moan about, like, how James has called her fat, like, all the time. But then when Billy Lee brings up a point about maybe being left out for being trans, then everyone hops on her and says that she, like, is totally in the wrong.
No, yeah, 100% has a point. I mean, this entire group of people, it is about leveraging your grievances interpersonally. And some people are better at it than others. Some people are so good at it, in fact, that they can leverage grievances that are entirely their fault. Like Jax. Jax could do something like fuck Faith, and then just if anyone brings it up, he is the most downtrodden man who walks the earth.
Yeah.
But Billy, yeah, has a legitimate grievance, and yeah, just crickets when she has a complete, yeah, no, she's right. What can you say? She's totally fucking right.
No one, yeah, and like no one, like it's just interesting to see everyone navigate this issue because it feels like this is like kind of a big issue, and like Billy Lee is really the only like queer representation on the show aside from just like people trying to out James as being like bisexual or whatever.
And so, Chiana.
Oh, yeah. And well, and like Ariana and Lala hooking up. Oh, and then Brittany and Kristen.
Yeah.
Lest we forget. But like,
oh, yeah.
All kind of like queer behavior is shrouded in like shame and secrecy on Vanderpump Rules.
Yeah, it's very antiquated, actually. It's definitely a show in the closet.
Yeah. And then to like parade the first like transgender character out like they did last season and make such a huge deal. And then the moment that she says anything, they're like, fuck off, Billy. Like,
yeah. Like, yeah. Crazy. Yeah. You just, like, you fucking bashing. Stupid bitch. Yeah.
They're like, what an asshole. This is an issue. Like, fuck off. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm waiting. I think, okay, if we're making predictions here, another season and a half for Billy, and then she tells us everything, and it's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Maybe it's one of those deals.
I thought definitely at the end of last season, I was like, they're keying Billy up to be like the villain of this season.
Yeah.
And I could just feel it. And then she would do a villain season and then get like her redemptive season and then everyone would be like, yes, honey. And then, but now even shouldn't be a villain in this specific way. You know what I mean? Like if she's going to be a villain, it needs to be just like, she's doing crazy shit, like fucking people's boyfriends or like fucking them over behind their back. Not like a villain. I just don't, it just doesn't gel with me. Like, she's a villain because she tries to make everything about her being trans and like
what
psychotic behavior that is. It's just like,
yeah,
we can do better than that.
Yeah. I feel it's like they needed, it's like a president with low approval ratings starting a war. That's how it feels.
Yeah. And then Billy utters like the best, I think it's been the best sentence of the season so far, which is, if she's going to pull her fat card, I'm going to pull my trans card.
That is, holy shit, yeah.
That's how you negotiate right there. Donald Trump.
That's the fucking art of the deal.
Yeah. I have nothing but respect for my president, Billy. Thank you so much for being my guest on this podcast.
My absolute pleasure.
My
absolute pleasure.
It's a true delight to like break things down in a way that I haven't really gotten to before. So I appreciate it.
Same for me. I've been waiting for an opportunity to talk about Vanderpump Rules in long form. This has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
For anyone who wants to follow you on social media, can you tell everyone where they can find you?
I'm at ByYourLogic on Instagram and Twitter.
Thank you so much. And that's all. Bye.
Thank you for having me. See ya.
I know I'm feeling, 'cause I know I'm feeling.